Yalla. Okay, so, Asmachta. So as we, again, we have to do this every day, but to remind ourselves where we are, right? But we'll skip the middle three answers, or go through them very quickly. The Gemara, one second. The Gemara had started off with Psukim, which led us to believe that it was Rabbi Kiva. Then the Gemara transitioned at some point and said, but we voted it out of existence. How could we vote Tosefet Shviyot out of existence? You need Gadol Men of Chacham of Minyan. So we said, okay, what does that tell us about whether Tosefet Shviyot is Daraita to Derabanan? At this point, you should know this by heart, right? So, if you're influenced by the Bavli, like the Pnei Moshe, then what you see is a transition between thinking it's Rabbi Kiva and thinking it's Rabbi Shmuel. However, if you don't, and you're not influenced by the Rambam, who thinks that Gadol Men of Chacham of Minyan is limited to Derabanan, you can assume that the Gemara at every stage was thinking it was Deraita. But then the Gemara said, okay, but how do you get rid of Tosefet Shviyot, Gadol Men of Chacham of Minyan? The Gemara gave several answers, right? However, the one we're up to, right, is where the Gemara says, don't worry, it's not a problem, because when they wanted to be materit, when they wanted to forbid it, rather, let me cross samchu. And when they wanted to permit it, let me cross samchu. When they forbade it, they put it on the pasuk b'charish of a katsir tishbot. And when they wanted to permit it, what did they do? They attached it to the comparison to Shabbat, just like Rabbi Yochanan in the Bavli, right, Kobe? And just like Shabbat doesn't have tosefet, so neither does Shviyot, right? Good. The problem is, what does samchu mean in this context? So, Reb Chaim Kanievsky raises two opposite possibilities. What are they, Kobe? Good. So one possibility is it means darshu, right? Just like Kobe said. And basically the Gemara throughout said that the issue here was daraita. Maybe he had a brief havamina that it wasn't daraita. But again, the way it's daraita, and if you follow the Rambam, that when it comes to biblical interpretation, you don't need Gadol Mimeno Bechochmah V'Minyan in order to overturn the previous interpretation. All you need is a new decision. Then what the Gemara is saying is that this is Daraita, and since it's Daraita and based on biblical interpretation, so then we used to understand the Pasuk to tell us that Tosefet Shviyot is Asur, and now we think it's Mutar. And unlike in the Bavli, which rejects Rabbi Yochanan of hand, here, that position, which is tribute to Rabbi Yonatan, is accepted as a possibility. That's one possibility for Chaim Kanievsky. Good. Other opposite extreme, which is also very radical, is no, the entire thing is Derabanan from beginning to end, meaning we thought that Rabbi Kiva said it was Daraita, or whoever it was who quoted a pasuk is Daraita, whether it's Rabbi Kiva or not, right? The answer is no. This is actually a completely different position. The position here is that what? It's everyone agrees it's Derabanan. Rabbi Akiva, or whoever that is quoting a pasuk, thinks it's an asmachta. And Rabbi Shmuel doesn't think it's really daraita. No one thinks it's daraita. That's all derabanan. What's the problem that Rucham Kanievsky was left with? Gadol mimenu b'chachma v'inyan. How does that answer the question? Right? Kobe, really, you really should feel proud of yourself that you're mechaving to the Sara Torah. It's like, you can tell people that. One possibility. Okay, fine. So, new. Good times.
No one wanted to suggest the entire thing was
Derabanan. I know, well, that, it's crazy. But, whatever. That's crazy. It's wild.
So crazy.
Right? Yes, exactly. However, what we want to do today is see an even more wild possibility. And that is, Nish Doraisa, Nish Derabanan. It's neither one. And that comes down to how do you understand Asmachta. So as we saw, most people think that Asmachta just means that it is Derabanan, right? And why do you attach the pasuk to the Derabanan? So either, as the Rambam says, and Rashi says, and Tosfot says, and the Kuzari say, why, as a mnemonic, to help you remember. Why is it so important to us to have extra reminders to help you remember the halacha? Because everything's Baal Peh, which is what Reb David HaKochavi, right, in the 14th century Provence says, as well as the Maharitz Chayos writing in his Mevo Talmud. Or similarly, and this is where we got on our discussion of modern art yesterday, or, you know, Rachmana Litzlan, you value aesthetics. And as the Rambam said, and the Rav Avram ben Rambam develops in his Perish Tagadah, for those who came last week to Agadata, we care about aesthetics. We care about literary beauty. And therefore, you know, laws aren't that beautiful. You know, they're not written so beautiful and flowery, right? But sometimes they are, and that's okay. Right? You know, Americans are a little bit pretentious about this, because our Constitution is so beautiful, right? Because it really is. It's all written all poetically and stuff like that. right? It has the preamble and it's so nice, which is not true of laws in other countries. Like the law codes in other countries, which are not prefaced with beautiful poetry. Yes. Yes. This was consistently every time I gave a legal ethics and halacha share, or Rabbi Churchiner did, we would end up taking at least 10 seconds to make fun of the difference of reading the American law and the Canadian. Because the Canadian one is like, blah. Very blah. Just blah. I mean, and sometimes very weird. And just sometimes very weird, right? In one case, I gave a share and I was comparing to Canadian law, and the Canadian judge gave up. They're like, we don't really know what to do, so we're going to find inspiration, and went back to Phoenician law. I was like, really? That was the closest you got, was Phoenician law from 3,000 years ago? I mean, okay, whatever. But law can be beautiful, right? It can be written beautifully if you value that aesthetic. So great. But what we left, and then we had the Maharil, who also thinks it's Rabbanan, but as we noted, also thinks that it's Rabbanan in a very weird way. How does the Maharil think that Asmachta is Rabbanan? We're tricking you! That's right, it's Rabbanan, but we're trying to trick the average person who doesn't know Torah, because not everybody learns Daf Yomi, right? Josh is like, I don't understand, it's right in the Gemara, who are you tricking? The answer is, all the people who don't know Shas, right? Which obviously will be none of you. All of you will have finished Shas in the next few years, right? Obviously. See, I don't understand. You're telling me, how are they tricking you? You read the Gemara. But unless you actually are going to take me up on that and finish all of Shas in the next few years, then you're going to be one of those people that are being tricked.
Well, I mean, I don't think anything...
And that's only in the cases... Shasta, right?
I don't think anything that says it's best talks about in this Mishnah, I don't think that that's...
Correct, but you might not have read the Gemara, and therefore someone will go to pasuk at you, and you don't realize that it's machta ba'alma. And maybe not every time the Gemara says it's machta. Yeah, though, as I mentioned, the problem here is that this may violate Baal Tosif according to the Rambam. Okay, technical problem. Might be an Issur Deraita. Because the Rambam thinks that what makes something Baal Tosif rather than a legitimate Derabbanan is whether you try to trick people
also
or not.
People.
Yeah, maybe, right? Where are you getting the idea that it's Lefnei Iver?
Tricking people into something that they don't
know. Oh, I mean, Avot Rabbi Natan says that, right? Avot Rabbi Natan, if you actually want to look at it, I didn't read it, but since you're saying it, Avot Rabbi Natan actually reads this as the original sin, right? This is one of my favorite pieces in Avot Rabbi Natan. If I ask you, what is the original sin, right? What would you say? What is the original sin? First of all, it's not an apple, but sure, eating the fruit off the tree. So that's actually not what the amazingly, Avot Rabbi Natan says, no, that's not the original sin. You know what the original sin is? Was Adam, as a male, not trusting Chava with the law and trying to trick her to be more machmir, which is what led her to eat from the apple. I kid you not. That is, according to the Midrash, that sounds like the most feminist Midrash in the world, but it's actually Avot Rabbi Natan. That the original sin was man not trusting woman with the law. Unbelievable. So look at it. In number 9, it says, Ezu siag sha'asa Adam arichan lidvarav. What, essentially, derabbanan law did Adam make? Harehu omer vaitzav Hashem Elokim al Adam lemor mikol eitz hagan achol tochel meitz hadat tovara lo tochel mimenu ki vayom achol mimenu motamud. God told Avram, on the day that you eat from the garden, from the tree in the Garden of Eden, you will die. Lo ratzah Adam arishon lomar lechava kederach shamar lehakadosh baruch hu. Adam did not want to tell Chava what God told him. Ella kach amar lo mipriya eitz asher betocha gan amar Elokim lo tochel mimenu v'lo tigubo ben temutun. So he didn't trust Chava. So what did he do? He said, don't eat it and don't touch it. He made up a gzera and he wasn't honest with Chava about what God said. At that moment, the snake got an idea. I can't trick Adam, Ella, to Elich Machshilad Chava, but I can trick Chava. Halach v'yashav etzla. So he went and he sat down next to her. V'hir basicha imani shmuzed with her. And Amar la imle nigiat omeret ziva aleinu HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Oh, God told you don't touch it. Hareini no gabo. I'll touch it. Veno maiden, I won't die. Af atim tigibo at yet meita, and if you touch it, you won't die either. Masa nachash rasha. What do you do? Ba'ota sham sha'a amad v'nagah ba'ilan bi'adav raglav v'irtio anachno be'aratav la'aretz. We touched it. In other versions of this, which appear in Midrash, right? He shoved her into the tree so that she touched it and didn't die. And that tricked her into thinking, oh, apparently Adam was wrong. And if he's wrong about one thing, he's wrong about all of it. Right? And I can eat it. So according to the, right, Rav Henkin makes a big deal of this in his book, Created Equal, that according to this, several Midrashic traditions, the original sin is not eating the apple, but is men not trusting women with the truth about halachic, the nature of the halachic process. Yeah, you could have kashas in the Midrash. That's not my point for right now. The point is that, like Josh, the problem here was, by lying, you're also leading to people, reds of lifneiver of sorts, right? Because by tricking them, right, what you're doing is you're actually creating problems, right? Because in this case, sometimes, we all know this, right? Meaning, look, when I know my wife is very insistent about this when she's teaching college classes, especially to people who are not necessarily going to teach keep halacha fully down the line. Some people think, well, you could protect people by telling them everything is asur midaraita, right? Or something like that. But it's not true, right? Because, well, either they'll learn that it's not and then, right? Or what'll happen is, right, sometimes people, they shouldn't do this, but sometimes people do this, which is they say, listen, I just can't handle it, and they make trade-offs. People do this in life. It's not right, but people do it, right? Which is they say, I can't keep all of it, and I'll keep what I can, right? But there was a case where basically, right, these people, this couple was taught that, you know, without any distinctions, right? And one of the longer details that you learn when before you get married are the what are called the harchakot, which are all the things that are asur midrabanan or from minhag to distance you from potentially violating nida, right? They're, right, like, not passing things, hand miyad liyad, right? Passing things to your wife when she's a nida, which is a minhag from the time of Rashi, right? It's not even derabanan, it's a minhag, right? But it takes a long time just to get through the whole list. So people emphasize that, right? And this particular couple, right, they couldn't handle it anymore. And they had learned so much about the archakot, they're like, oh, but we'll keep all the archakot, but we're going to give up on vestot, right? Which is basically that when a woman's period is anticipated, right, they're forbidden to be with each other, even though she hasn't yet had her period, right? But that's asur midaraita, right? But they didn't know that, right? Because when they were taught, it was all the same, and they made a decision. Even if you're going to make the decision, right? I should say this for the millionth time, because someone's going to say, oh, I said you could give up on lacha. That's not what I said, right? Is that if imkvar, someone's not going to be able to do it, right? It's important that they know the difference between violating a daraita, violating a darabanan, or as simple as someone violates a halacha and then they feel like a terrible person and now they're just like, okay, I give up, right? It's important to know, yes, you did something wrong, but what you violated was a minhag. So don't do it next time, but you're not like a terrible person, right? Right? You didn't violate an isur karet, right? Some people, they think that they violate a minhag and they think they violate an isur karet and now they give up and, you know, forget it, I'm a terrible person, there's no hope, right? It's important for people to have a basic understanding that, yes, you should ideally keep all of halacha, but not all of halacha is created equal, right? That is actually important. It can lead to problems if you don't. And that's what you get here from this Avot Rabbi Natan, right? And therefore, yes, the Maharil is really problematic, right? Okay. It gets even more problematic if you want. My favorite historical case of this is the Pesach Din of Michalovce, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, Hungarian, but whatever. Where this was a big machoket was basically the Haredi establishment, like the really, really the founders of the Haredi movement in Hungary, weren't just opposed to the reform, they were opposed to the Neo-Orthodox. And they came out with this Pesach Din that basically everything that the Neo-Orthodox, which is essentially similar to the modern Orthodox, right, was asur midaraita, right? Like, gavalt, you rishayim, you wear clothing that regular people wear, or you give the drasha in the language that people understand. Asur midaraita. And they felt that it was legitimate to do that, even if they didn't really believe it, because all is fair in war,
essentially. And that was the psak, spearheaded by Rabbis Hillel Lichtenstein and Rabbi Akiva Schlesinger. But the Maram Sheik, who was also known as being quite a kanai, right, quite a zealot, still felt, okay, I mean, I agree with you, I'm against the Neo-Orthodox as much as you are, but I can't sign this because it's like crazy. It's crazy talk, right? It's Baltosif, right? He said, like, it's Baltosif, right? You can't do that. You can't pretend just because it's wrong. Right? He said, I agree with you, it's wrong. I think it's against the minhag, and I think they shouldn't do it. But you can't pretend that something's minhag is d'oraita because it's Baltosif. And so this minhag played itself out there. What? It's Baltosif. It's adding to the Torah because the Rambam says when you pretend that something is not d'oraita is, right, that's Baltosif. You're allowed to say it's a bad idea. It's usher because it's d'rabban. It's usher because of minhag, right? You're allowed to say that. You just got to be honest, right? It's a fascinating, fascinating historical incident. Yes. You always got to be careful because you never know who's going to be in the crowd when you give a shiur, right? Because I talked about this my first week in Toronto at the Pirkei Avot shiur. Your father actually gave me the Pirkei Avot shiur just to introduce me to the community. And it was the first parak of Pirkei Avot. So I talked about this on Asus Siag Latera. And after I told this historical story, someone in the shul came over to me and said, hey, I'm so glad you talked about that story because Rabbi Hillel Lichtenstein was my great-grandfather, and my kids are named for him. Mm. Right? I was like, oh, okay. You know Lichtenstein, the Bayit. Yeah, that one. Yeah, so they're descended. They are great-grandchildren of Hillel Lichtenstein. That's why they have Hillel Lichtensteins in their family. They're not kind of like that. They were just like, wow, like, I'm glad I didn't know anyone and still knew about my great-great whatever grandfather who was a leader of Hungarian Jewry in the latter half of the 19th century. And the answer is yes. Yes, I do. It's, in fact, he's very well known. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, but now that brings us to the Ritva. Okay, the Ritva says, no, that's not what an Asmachta is. Okay, so let's read the Ritva inside, because we summarized it last time, but I need you to read it inside. So this Ritva comes up in the context of Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofarot. Right? That when you blow the shofar, you are supposed to say Psukim with it. Right? Who does this? All of us. Thank you. Thank you, Kobe. That was the right answer. Sometimes the answer is obvious, but I just want to know, like, how familiar are you with, you know, the basic practices we do? Right? Well, I'm glad you remember. Not everyone does, right? Good, but you. Now I'm not depressed. I would have been depressed if no one had answered me, right? Gemara says, "Mahadika Amar." So the Ritva says, "What's the problem?" The Gemara says about the Psukim of Malchiyot Zichronot and Shofarot. Remember, Shmona Esrei is always Dirabanan, right? It says Amara Kadosh Baruch Hu, or elsewhere Amar Rachmana. God said you should say Malchiyot Zichronot and Shofarot. So Ritva says, "What do you mean God said? It's Dirabanan." How could it be? So what does he say? V'hadika Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Imru Lifanai Malchiyot Zichronot v'Shofarot. What does it mean God said say Malchiyot Zichronot and Shofarot? Mishum da'af al gav dipsukei malchiyot zichronot v'shofarot einam min ha-Torah el mid-Rabbanan k'd-Parishna. Even though they are d'Rabbanan. So how could God say it? Mikol makom mimash amra Torah zichron tru'ah. Since the Torah calls Rosh Hashanah yom zichron tru'ah, yesh lilmod shera'ui la'azkir psukei Torah psukei zikaron. You learn from this that it is proper to mention psukim about the shofar and psukim about commemoration. Umalchiot nafkalan k'moshe darshu chazal misifrei mipasuk vayelachem lizikaron lefnei elokeichem anei Hashem elokeichem. And there's yet a different drasha for malchiot, that I am Hashem, your God, shein tam lomar ani Hashem elokeichem, el z'bnei av v'chol makom sh'atomer zichronot ato somech lo malchiot. From here you learn every time you talk about zichronot, so you should also mention that God is king. And this is the asmachta from which we derive that you should say psukim. Umishum hachi katani Rabbi Akiva shamar Hakadosh Baruch Hu imrai lefana imru lefanai malchiyot zichronot vechulei. And now he tells you, so how is it that God said it? Shekol ma sheyesh lo asmachta min ha-pasuk. Anything which has an asmachta. He'ir ha-kadosh baruch hu. God, what is he'ir? Made a note of. Right? God wrote in the margins. Shera'ui la'asot kein. It's a good idea to do this. Good idea. Elish lo kavu chova. I'm not telling you you have to. I'm just saying it's a good idea. It's just, it's God. God. Oh, yeah. I'm not forcing you. I'm not forcing you. I'm just telling you this is the right thing to do. I'm not saying you have to. It's not like I created, I mean, I did create the universe, but you know, that doesn't mean you have to take my, doesn't mean you have to take my opinion into account. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you that as creator of the universe, I think this is a good idea. You know, but no pressure. No pressure. That's what the Ritva says, right? And he said, listen, rabbis, you have the option. And this is obvious and true. And then he says some very harsh things about the Rambam, Ramban, Rashi, Tosfot, Kuzari, all Rishonim who disagree with him. All of them. Not like those people, everybody else, who says that Asmachta is just like not what the Torah meant. Chas v'shalom. God forbid. Yishtakeya hadavar v'lo yomar. That is a very rabbinic way of saying things. What does yishtakeya hadavar v'lo yomar means? Let it be sunk. Right? And not said. Meaning, God forbid, may those words be sunken and never spoken. It is heresy! Heresy! Sorry, that's his next words. Sorry. Shizu dat minutu. For it is heresy. Right? I rabbis sometimes get a little bit overboard there. But yeah, I mean, I don't usually, not usually say that which the Rambam, Ramban, Kuzari, Rashi, Tosfot said is heresy. It's not whatever. But the Ritva is like, it is heresy. Heresy. Aval ha-Torah hi'ira b'kach. No, God himself meant it. U'masrach chiyuv ha-davar l'kavolo chachamim im yirtzu. This is the bizarrest formulation, which is, God gave over the obligation to the rabbis to institute it if they so choose. Try parsing that language, right? Okay, I told you, I had to read it inside. I don't know what to tell you. Kimo shene'emar. I don't know. Vasita apiyadavar shayagidulcha. Lofichach tinsachamim nodin b'chom makom raya ozeicha shu asmachta. That's why the rabbis always try to find you in a smachta l'divrehem in a Torah. Lomar shayin mechachim davar milibam. Because what they're telling you is that they're not making it up. The kol Torah shebal peh remuzah b'Torah. And all oral Torah is hinted at somewhere in the Torah shebichtav, in the written Torah. She tmima, which is perfect and whole. V'chas v'shalom, God forbid, she chasera klum. God forbid, is it missing anything? So the Ritva tells you, Asmachta, is it Daraita? No. Is it Darabanan? No. It is this very bizarre thing where God himself gave strongly worded advice to the rabbis if they so choose to take up the obligation to optionally institute it.
It's your choice.
Your choice. Your choice. Whatever you want. Whatever you want. I'm just telling you. It's not like whatever you want. I'm just telling you, in my experience as creator of the universe, I'm just telling you it's good advice. Just telling you. Yeah. Okay. Now, this is quite striking. Now, what do we do with this? So, I gave you a few sources here. So, first of all, I gave you an 11 that the Maharal takes this in stride. The Maharal thinks that, also agrees with the Ritva, at least on some asmachtot. He doesn't think all asmachtot are like this, but he does think that it is true of some asmachtot. Okay, and he has a long discussion here about bishul akom, right? About foods cooked by non-Jews. So if you look, and he says, when you divide this, it's divided in different categories. So he says, Ha'echan, mashu perishu chamim mitzvah betarav, zen nikra divrei sofrim. Some things are straight up biblical, and the rabbis just interpret it. Second, hashenihim mitzvot shem batzmam divrei sofrim, veviu raya udrash min haTorah. Then there are derabanan things where you get support from the Torah. And the pasuk is an asmachta. The rabim toim shesovrim lomarke in lo tam mitzvah klal shum inyan al Torah beemet. People, some people make a mistake and say there is no connection between the rabbinic law and the pasuk that they quote in an asmachta. Rak sheim asul mitzvah davar drash min haTorah ki ilu hayazem militza bilvad. And they just think it's poetic. It's a militza. That's the Rambam in the Mirna Vilchem. Va'omrim kach ta'u. They made a mistake. Lo hevinu divrehem. They don't even know what they are saying. Ki chas v'shalom shiye davar echad midivrehem ne'amar l'archavad al-lashon v'yipuim l'itza. God forbid anything of the Torah is there just because it sounds nice. Ra kol divrehem. Emet, everything is true. V'kasher amru minayin davar zeve rayam en akra yish bemet rayam en akra divrehem. There really is a proof. And then he goes through the example from Bishul Akum. In that case, right, and he goes through, I don't want to get too much into it. Fine. Now, I will note that sometimes this blurriness is found in other sources. Even the Rambam does have at least one place where he sounds a little bit blurrier, and that is in this very complicated piece in the 17th parak of Kalim in the Parish of Mishnayot, where the Rambam, for all his insistence on being clear, in one place tells you, but by the way, I'm not really clear. There are certain things, Beshita, I'm not clear about. How many of you have learned Kiddushin? Good. How many of you, when you were doing Kiddushin, I don't know how much Eon you did, but they showed you the Rambam who says that Kiddushei Kesef is midivrei sofrim. That marriage through money is divrei sofrim. Right? And then the question everyone says is, what do you mean divrei sofrim? It's deoraita. Right? And then what do they say? Right? And they say, or they say, no, it really means derabanan. Or they say, right? Well, why is it confusing what the Rambam actually means? Because if you look in the 17th Berg of Kalim, he says as follows, V'zachor klal zeh. Here's the rule I want you to remember. Bo teida b'chol mekom she'elecha safek be'ezeh shiur she'yeh im tinhog bo lachmir ulakil. Whenever you're not sure whether to be stringent or lenient, I don't get confused when I tell you that measurements are divrei sofrim when it's halachal moshe misinai. Ki kol mashalonit ba'er b'lashon ha'Torah midivrei sofrim, anything which is not explicit in the Torah, I call divrei sofrim. V'afilu dvarim she'en halachal moshe misinai. Sometimes that's halachal moshe misinai. Ki amru midivrei sofrim, mashmar she'davar kabbalat ha'sofrim, meaning it came from the sofrim. K'chol perusham. So he says, sometimes when I use the word divrei sofrim, I mean that it's halacha moshe misinai, it's doraita. And sometimes I mean that it's derabanan. Don't worry about it. Divrei sofrim is a catch-all, which either means doraita or derabanan. Don't worry about it. It just means anything which is not explicit in the Torah. So it is true that you sometimes see these blurring of Darais and Darabon in other sources. Fine. I will note that you have a similar idea in Rav Elchanan Wasserman, but not about Asmachta, but about Darabon in general. So, okay. So if I ask you very briefly, why are you obligated to listen to the rabbis? Why do you have to listen to the rabbis? What's the source for their authority? Where in the Torah? So the Rambam says, "L'tasur min adavar shi'yagidu l'cha yamin u'smol," right? That you shall not stray from their words left or right. Yeah, you've heard that before. That's what the Rambam says. The Ramban says, no. That pasuk only tells you that you have to listen to who? The Sanhedrin Agadol Yoshev Yushalayim. Right? To the high court. But not that you have to listen to every rabbinic decree. That's not the source. So Elchanan Wasserman says, okay. Then why, according to the Ramban, do you listen to the rabbis? So there are different answers, but Rav Yochanan says, you know why you listen to the rabbis? Because before you answer why you listen to the rabbis, I have to ask you a better question, which is why you listen to the Torah? Why is the Torah binding? What? Very good! Because God said so. He said the real Mechayev isn't that the Torah said so, it's that God said so. Right? That, in the end of the day, is what all things have to be grounded in. And he says, aha. So, the reason you keep the Torah is because God said so. And you know why you keep the Rabbanans? Because when the rabbis say something, that reveals that's what God really wanted. Oh, well, if that's the case, then why is Safik Daraita L'Chomra, Safik Darabanan L'Kula? He says, because it's true that that's what God wanted. But since he didn't write it in the Torah explicitly, it makes it weaker. Because simply having words in the Torah gives something strength. Even though in the end of the day, it's all just because God wanted it, having words in the Torah has normative value. How does he know? Because the Midrash says that Yafasi Chatan Shel Avdei Avot Yoter Mitaratan Shel Bnei Ham. The Midrash says, oh look, Eliezer is so important because the story of him trying to get Rivka to marry is told twice, right? All his talking, right? And many halachot, like all of Hilchot Shabbos, are derived from Kaharin Atlin Bisara, as the Mishnah says, right? It's like a mountain hanging from a hair, right? That we just compared to the Mishkan, and that's where we learned it from. Aha, you see that the number of words that something has in the Torah makes it important. But what does he do, just in a different context, like the Ritva? He just said, listen, there can be different things where God wants you to do it, and they can still be of different strengths, because things that God explicitly told you to do are one level of strength, and things that God wants you to do but he didn't explicitly tell you, you still have to do it because God wanted you to do it, but it's not explicit, right? So you do see other ideas that work in the same direction as the Ritva, okay? Right, where there can be things that God wants, but they're not quite d'oraita, right? For Rav Elchanan, that's a d'rabbanan. For the Ritva, that's what Asmachta is, but it's even stronger, right? It's God telling you, not the rabbis intuited my will, but I told the rabbis what I think the good idea, a good idea is, and they don't want to take my advice. I mean, okay, so ignore me. No, no, fine. You don't like my advice? You think you know better? Okay, fine. Fine, what do I know? What do I know? What experience do I have? Okay. Yeah. Now, there might be nafkaminas to this, and then we'll get to Rizal Tamar. So, for example, the Prima Gadim has a fascinating position. Prima Gadim, in his Pticha Kolelet, which if you ever want to sit down with a Sefer that will tell you everything, it's the Pticha Kolelet. The Prima Gadim, in his introduction to Shulchan Aruch, has what he called, what's Pticha Kolelet? What's a Pticha? An introduction. What's a Kolelet? What does Kolel mean? Kolelet. All-inclusive. It is the all-inclusive introduction to all things Torah. That's what it is. It's a fascinating, fascinating book. I love it. It's great. It's worth sitting down it's great. So, but in that context, in Aleph Chaf, he says the following Chiddush, that normally, Safik D'Oraita L'Chumra, Safik D'Rabbanan L'Kula. But what about Safik Asmachta? So the Prima Gadim says, Safik Asmachta L'Chumra. Why? So Rav Yosef Engel in Beit HaOtzar has two possibilities. One which he suggests and then immediately says, no, that's obviously insane. And then his actual perush. So he has a Havamina. What's his Havamina? Let's see if you can get his crazy Havamina. I'll give you only one hint. Maharil. Go. What is his Havamina? Very good. Right? So his Havamina is, I know why Safik Asmachta L'Chumra. Because if Asmachta is the rabbi's trying to trick you into thinking something's Daraita, well, let's carry this trick on herself and trick you by treating it like Daraita. And then he immediately says that's crazy, because that's, you know, Baltosif and insane. So, no. And then he says, okay, there's a better explanation, which is what Kobi said, which is, if you hold like the Ritva, then Asmachta is a Dirabbanan, but a Dirabbanan that God really wants you to do. Exactly. It's a derabbanan, meaning it's derabbanan in the sense that the rabbis are the ones who formally instituted it. But they are revealing God's will. So it's like closer to a Doraita. Okay? So that's my subject, Le Chumra. Now I bring you to Rav Yisachar Tamar. So who's Rav Yisachar Tamar? Who managed to look up Rav Yisachar Tamar? Remember, I care about biography. Who is Rav Yisachar Tamar? If you guys go in the base by our Yerushalmis, you'll see a very big set there called the Alei Tamar. And if you ever go to Gush, how many of you have ever been to Gush? Well, if you ever go to Gush, so if you ever go to the yeshiva and you go to the library, which is one of the biggest Jewish studies libraries in the world, but if you go downstairs and you go to the back left, I spent much time here, right? Go to the back left, there is a big picture of an elderly rabbi that says, Harav Yisachar Tamar, with a sign over it that says, Sifriat Tamar, right? And what is it? It is his private collection, because he was a huge Talmud Chacham, and when he died, they donated his library to the Gush Library, as is. And they kept it separate from the rest of the library, so if you're ever looking for rare books, right, one of the places to look is the Yisachar Tamar side of the library. So who is he? Wikipedia does know. English Wikipedia doesn't know. Wikipedia knows. Not Wikipedia, but Wikipedia knows. What? Wikipedia. Yes, there's a well-known pop song in Israel, which was called Wikipedia. Hanan Ben Ari. Wikipedia. It is an excellent song, yes. I do like that when I Google it, because no one ever, because, you know, it doesn't stop when the person dies. It tells me that Yisachar Tamar is 125 years old. But he would be. So who is he? So Rav Yisachar Tamar was born in 1896 in Zadonska Vala, Poland. Poland, I don't know, whatever. And he was he's a descendant of the Magen Avraham. He learned in yeshiva in Poland and Galicia, learned by a bunch of different important people, including Rav Meir Dan Plotsky, very important people. And then eventually he spent a little bit of time in England when he was invited by Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. Who's Leo Young? He became one of there were three main modern Orthodox rabbis in the 1950s in New York City. Like the leading rabbis, one of them was Leo Young, right? They were the rabbis of the Jewish Center of Lincoln Square Synagogue and Park East, maybe? No. One of those. Whatever. Like there's three shuls in Manhattan. I forget which one it was, right? So one of them was Rabbi Leo Young. One of them was Rabbi David DeSello Poole. And that Tevra. And then he moved to Israel and became the rabbi of Tel Aviv, okay? So he's Rabbi Tel Aviv, and his magnum opus was Alei Tamar, which is a series of Perushim and essays on the Yerushalmi, okay, which are excellent. So the Alei Tamar comes up with this, which is, I mean, this is brilliant. I mean, I don't know if it's true, but it's brilliant. Here's what he says. Bishash Asru 16. Bishash Asru L'mikra Samchu, Bishash Etir L'mikra Samchu. Mikan Shaheter Tzarech L'chiot Naseh B'otam Atanayim Shia Asur. Said, first of all, what you learn is that the heter, any heter must be parallel to the iser. Okay? So if the iser had an asmachta, then the heter had an asmachta. Okay? And now he says, remember, what's the question we want to answer? Not just how do you understand the word samchu, but how does this solve the problem of gadol mimenu b'chochma v'minyan? Did you go and then come back?
One large left.
Says, how do you deal with it? How do you deal with the stira and the psukim? So now he says, what does the Ritva say about Asmachta? Okay, That's just a quote from the Ritva, right? That was literally just a quote. And now he says, aha, here's my brilliant chop.
Then normally, you thought according to the Ritva, you had three options. There's Doraita, there's Dirabonan, and then there's Asmachta. And what's Asmachta? Where God gave you an option, but he said, it's just my advice.
He said, there's one more possibility, and that is, God gave you two contradictory optional pieces of advice. And you can do whatever you want. You mean there's an easier way, which is say nothing?
Yes.
Shocking! I know.
But
that's not what it is. Right? But you could, but that's not what he says. He says, no, what God did here was he programmed in two contradictory pieces of advice, which is, as creator of the universe, I give you one piece of advice, which is you should extend Shemitah.
And I'm giving you another piece of advice. Don't extend Shemitah. Good luck.
That's my sagely godly advice. Good luck, rabbis. Figure that one out. No, but once they set it up, then they need Chachma of a minion to overrule it. Because it's a Derabanan.
Okay.
But he says, but not if. But if God himself gave you two contradictory pieces of advice, what can you learn from that? That God thought that his advice was that you should only keep this law sometimes. And that's why he didn't say nothing. He said both. So that, because a straight Derabanan, once you decree it, it's hard to uproot. But this isn't a straight Derabanan. What is it? It's a rabbinic manifestation of God's suggestion. But if God gives you two mutually exclusive, opposite, opposing suggestions, then what does that reveal about God? That God thinks
that sometimes you should treat it as forbidden
and sometimes it's permitted. And therefore, why don't you need Chachma v'minyan? Why don't you need Chachma v'minyan?
Because you need
style. Yes, because this is closer to a Doraita. You're not making a new rabbinic decree or repealing it. What you're doing is channeling God's other advice. How's that for creativity? Right? And he says, of course, when I gave this share last time, someone said to me, is there any other example? I said, not that I know of. But he says as follows, there's no contradiction. They complement each other. God gave it to the rabbis to do whatever they want. What God was saying was, if there's a time when you think that it's proper to extend Shemitah, let's just read it, then I give you my bracha. Do it. And when you have a need to permit it, Yatiru, so do it. And therefore, and he says, that's what it means even in the Bavli, right? Remember in the Bavli, it said, whoever wants to be Mavatal, it can. How did we understand that? That's within the Shita that it's Dirabanan, right? And what does he say? No, that's not what it is. Im yirut sorach shashit kakulo karkodim lechusho tam achareiz manin alalo yekoch beidin shal otam adero levatel. It's that God had programmed it in, that if the court sees that that's the only financial way forward, then God gives his blessing, and therefore, do they need Chachma of a minyan? No.
But the thing is, they already do this plenty of times, even regular Doraitas, where they say, oh, it doesn't apply in this case. Like,
yes, but this is not a Doraita at all, right? Well, I mean, what's driving him? What's driving him is the word Samchu. What's driving him is the word Samchu. Is that right? What? Right, which normally means Asmachta. And he says, aha, it does mean Asmachta. Just in this case, it means contradictory Asmachta, because it means that God himself programmed in two options and not one. Yeah, presumably you could get here without it. But he's solving the problem of Gadol Menuchah HaMinyan by saying only a regular Derabanan is so limited. But here it's not, because since God programmed in both options, God is saying, listen, on what authority are you overturning the previous court? Not on your authority, but on your authority to channel my advice. Because it's not deraita. It's asmachta. No, it's not. It's asmachta. Asmachta is derabanan. It's derabanan because the rabbis are the ones in charge of decreeing it. You don't. You know, it's not deraita. It's derabanan, but not derabanan. It's, remember what he said? God obligated them to take his good advice if they so choose. So, for Shachar Tamar, it's God obligated them to take his two opposite side of a piece of his advice when they so choose to take advantage of either piece. What? No, it's a derabanan with God, with you channeling God's will. It's not daraita, it is an authentic rabbinic channeling of God's will. Correct. And that's why I gave you Rav Elchanan. Right there, Rav Elchanan says, yeah, even if something's God's will, there's still a difference between it being in the Torah and not. And this is how he solves the problem of God, right? This solves the wrong God, the man of Chachma Minyan. Right? Because you're not just voting on it. What you're doing is channeling God's other built-in possibility. How's that? How's that for creativity? Right? Which leaves us with, so what is this thing we call Tosefet Shviit? Let's summarize. So, in the Bavli, according to Rabbi Kiva, right. According to Rabbi Ishmael, Halacha Moshe Mishnah with rabbinic expansions. Yes? According to Pnei Moshe, the Yerushalmi itself goes through the exact same possibilities. According to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, two possibilities. Either the Yerushalmi thinks from beginning to end that it is deraita. Possibility one. Possibility two is no one ever held it as deraita. Even Rabbi Akiva only thinks it's derabanan, right? Which is very problematic. Chachma v'minyan. And now you have Rabbi Yisachar Tamar who says lozev, 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 lozev. Right? It's not deraita. It's not derabanan. It's not der. It's not halacha Moshe B'Sinai. It's not der. How come we're saying with their abundant extensions? It's none of that. It's God himself said, there are times I want you to keep this law and times I won't. So I'm going to program in two options. And when you choose to take advantage of the stringent position, you have my blessing. And when you choose to take advantage of the lenient position, you have my blessing. And therefore, don't worry about technicalities like Chachma, Minyan, and the like. Why should you do that? It doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, you have my blessing, whatever you do. Boom. Right? And this only works because, as we said, it takes a very particular interpretation of asmachta, because as we saw, asmachta is either a mnemonic, rambam, rambam, eh? It's for aesthetic beauty. It's to trick you. Right? Maharil. But if you hold like the Ritva, no, it's God passive-aggressively giving you advice and saying, listen, it's my advice. You don't have to take it. You don't want to trust me, that's fine. I have no problem with that. Don't trust the creator of the universe, not my problem, right? But sometimes God goes farther and says, you don't want to take my advice? Fine, but I'll just give you the opposite advice. And whatever you do, you're taking my advice. Just make sure you understand that, right? That's how he deals with it, okay? With that, I think I have finished the major issues. So what we'll do on Sunday is we will just read till the end of the Gemara, make a few last comments until the end of Halacha Aleph, summarize, and maybe make one point, right, what we haven't dealt with. Come back for a moment to the question of why in the Bavli, Tosefet Shviit doesn't apply when there's no Beit HaMikdash, even though there's not necessarily a good answer, but maybe comment on that for a minute. There is one Mara Fulda that I would like you to read, which really gets to the heart of the issue of how connected Shemitah is to Shabbat. So I might give you that. Hopefully we'll knock that all off on Sunday and then continue on to Halacha Bet. Okay? So does that piece by Yisachar Tamar give you a lot to think about nature of Torah, nature? Yeah, I thought so. It's a great piece. I think it's, like I said, the first Halacha is really interesting. A lot going on. Fine. Bis Seder.